Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 53 of the Pika Sorelli podcast. We have the wrong number in our notes. I am one of your hosts, Emilson. Now you see a little bit behind the screen. You know, we copy our notes sheet from one week to the next, and it didn't get updated this time. And the one who just updated it is my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week we have kind of a grab bag of different topics. We're in this weird spot where we've been talking a lot about raid in particular. Like, raiding is a lot of where we engage with the game, and so that's a natural thing for us to gravitate towards, but we don't want to make this show like all raid all the time. So this week we are taking a break from talking about raiding stuff and talking about, you know, other things. There's not really any other like singular big things to talk about, although the MDI is going on this weekend, the first cup, which I think we will touch on a little bit. Yes. But in the absence of other like big news, we are just going to catch up on some of the other smaller things that we haven't yet.
Yes. It's stuff that I think we haven't put too much time into at least talking through. We may have touched on it a little bit, but this may be a little bit of like a little deep dive on what we're thinking about certain things. So, so cool. But I think before we do that, we'll get into what happened last week.
Yes.
So we had a couple stories that I think are important to at least inform everybody on. The first one is, of course, Renowned is now down to only two levels weekly, which I don't really know why this. I put this in here. I think it was just more because I'm annoyed now that it's going to take. For whatever reason in my head, Renowned was three. It was always always would be three. And then
people were even speculating that there would be some hidden third weekly quest that would unlock once you finished your campaign, but there's not. It's
two three, for the rest of time.
Three down to two.
Yeah. So a little upsetting, but I mean it is what it is. At this point it's kind of I do my weeklies on Tuesday and then we're done. I'm excited on my paladin. I killed Sidon Athreus last week or this week, I guess. So I don't have to worry about the anima one for next week to save that turn. Yeah. But it's down to two a week now. Campaigns are over. I actually did start watching the Noble campaign story videos.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those.
Yeah, maybe next week I'll be able to explain what happens. Because at this point, having done almost or all of the Necro, all of the Kyrian, and all of the Venthyr, I have no idea what happens to anyone. I know that in Kyrian, they rebuild something in the middle. I know in Necro, there's like a ziggurat, and they like stop people from fighting in Bastion or something. And then with Venthyr, you essentially start a party at the end. Like, that's the goal, I think. and Kel'Thas is around.
I want to play the game that I was playing.
In any event, Renowned down to two a week, but you know it is what it is. I think it's just kind of go through the rest of the updates. I think
campaign quests, you're gonna have a fun time when you get to the end of the Venthyr one of Noble's videos, because not that you like misled me, but there's some important details recontextualize it that you left out. So
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, probably wasn't paying attention. I'll be completely
honest.
I'll rewatch this. Maybe I'll learn something. So I think the next big thing on just the Renowned piece is just your between 30 and 34, you'll get your capstone or your final tier of your various soul lines. Which will be the next big power jump, I think, for a lot of people. So that'll be in, 4 weeks from now, I think? I forget.
Renowned 30 is 2 weeks from now. Renowned 26 right now, so we go to 28 next week and 30 the week after.
Gotcha. I think my next big one's at 34, so I still have a...
Really? I guess that depends on which soulbind you're looking at.
Yeah, which soulbind, yeah. So the third one for...
So Nia for Night Fae gets her last row unlocked at Renown 30. Gotcha. So if you're Night Fae, that's a huge power boost.
Yeah.
Whether you go the potency route and you take the interrupt one, or you go the endurance route and you take burrs, either path is a big upgrade.
Nice. So yeah, so renowned, slowly grinding it up. Next story was PvP nerf. So these are not live yet. They'll go live with resets, but a bunch of classes got nerfed in PvP, which notably on this list, for good reason, is druids. So Convoke is no longer going to be casting Full Moon or Feral Char or Feral Frenzy, sorry, when you are in combat with a player, which is great. And then there's a bunch of other nerfs too.
But that's the big Mage one. Got a couple of big ones.
Well, oh yeah.
Yeah, they've got this conduit Infernal Cascade. So while Combustion is active, your Fire Blast grants you X% increased fire damage for 5 seconds, stacking up to 2 times. And this was a key part of, you know, their burstiness.
Yeah.
Along with a nerf to their the legendary that gave them better barriers. So
yeah.
But yeah, so the Convoke the Spirits nerf is interesting for a couple reasons. One, like Full Moon was obviously the biggest thing that people complained about, because just like randomly dying to a full moon is a very easy to point at singular thing that is not fun,
right?
But at the same time, you can still totally get YOLO 360 one shot by 3 star surges coming out of it.
God, dude, yes, yeah.
So it doesn't, you will still see videos of people getting womboed by Convoke.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't end. That is true. It does not end.
But there will be a little bit less of the "oh, I got full moon and now I die."
Yeah, which will help. They also reduced just in general the damage of DKs, hunters, and warlocks, or their pets. Read that the wrong way. You basically can't blow up their pets either.
Are
yeah
harder to kill.
Yeah, which I guess is a good thing, because I know that we had been focusing, when I've done some arena work, focusing some of the warlock pets we saw.
Particularly yeah, because you can kill them pretty easily. I know I wasn't killing them, but when we played against warlocks while I was on my paladin, you can turn evil their dark glare.
Oh.
Which, I'm sure makes them very unhappy, because their pet doesn't have a PvP trinket.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. Then there's a couple of other ones that I think are very interesting, too. Dampening starts at 20% now if you have a tank or healer on your team in 2v2s.
Oh, that's good. Which is
honestly good, but also kind of annoying. Yeah. And then they nerfed Ward of Glory in PvP for paladins that are not holy.
Good. You know what I didn't like when I looked at the screen after I played? And if I played a ret,
he had more healing than me. See yourself losing and healing to the ret.
It was great. It was awesome to have that happen.
I
mean, so.
I was obviously playing ret wrong, because I wasn't casting Wog enough outside of wings.
Yeah. Yeah, no, paladins in at least like the non, I mean,
paladin healers are still good. Playing but prop, but not as ret. I was trying to do damage, and obviously that was wrong.
Yeah, just heal. It's easy.
Just heal. Like hit wings, do damage in the wings, and then heal everything else. Yeah.
Exactly.
This is not a PvP podcast. Do not trust our rating. Your rating is our advice.
Exactly. But yeah, so across the board, some nerfs that are coming in on Tuesday, which, I mean, people seemed okay with them. So at least the folks that I've talked to.
I think one that a lot of people were surprised wasn't there was Windwalker.
Oh, yeah, true.
Because Windwalker is one that's also extremely good right now. Although I believe they had less representation in the AWC than they do on the ladder. Yeah. So that might be part of why.
Yeah, true. Or, I mean, they always say, like, these are always early changes, too, so they could always add Windwalker before
Tuesday goes live. Windwalker Tuesday will wake up, and it's like, damage reduced by 20% in PvP. Yeah. Don't do that, Blizzard.
Just absolutely destroy them. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so those are the PvP adjustments coming on Tuesday, which will be fun to play around with. So next up we have sort of a, not a sad post, but Lighty who was the tank for the Golden Guardians team, previously Method NA, basically one of the top two teams in the world, right? It's yeah. basically Echo's team and Golden Guardians at this point in terms of MDIs. Lighty, their tank, is actually quitting. So this was the last cup that he was going to participate in. And basically, while it's kind of sad, it's funny that the reason I brought this up is just the way that the reasons they actually cited for, or Lighty cited for quitting, which is essentially like underlying like the lack of like prize money, which I think is one part of it, but also the commitment, right? Like this is a yeah. commitment where, you know, Lighty has to turn off his stream because they're not going to like leak strats before going in. It's a ton of time trying to optimize these routes that these teams spend. And then on top of that, like the prize money at the end is not huge.
A lot of these teams that are competing for the top end are spending, you know, the entire week of time trials just practicing those maps to get their time trials in. And the ones that want to compete in the cups after, or the like long term, are doing even more than that. It's a huge amount of time investment where they can't be streaming,
mm-hmm.
like you said, and the prize money sucks.
Yeah, I mean that's the underlying problem. Is Lighty talked a little bit about it, where like he plays a ton of PoE. He's basically probably one of the best solo self-found hardcore players. Actually, he is the best because he's won, I think, the last like 4 leagues worth of like prize money, right? And he's like, I make more in like the 4 days that I play PoE than I would make in an entire like cup season of MDI. So I mean, ultimately, like you want to see people play what they're happy with playing, but like at the same time, like these guys, this is their job, right? So it's like go where the money is at that point. So it sucks. I think JB has already said they've already got a new roster ready. And we'll talk about this maybe a little bit, but they, you know, Golden Guardians is actually out. They did not make top two in terms of the cup this weekend. So
I saw that.
Yeah. They had a bad miss. We'll get into it. They had a bad miss. And then a miss that everyone was bad at. That dungeon is super buggy. And then, they just went out. I forget who they played after that in the lowers, but yeah, they lost their lowers match. So. Lighty's done in MDI. I don't think he's done raiding, so he'll still do like the limit stuff.
Somewhat ironically, that's actually a lower time commitment.
Yeah, like
or at least enough. Like it's a huge amount of time for a short window of time, kind of like right. PoE. Like when he's doing those hardcore races, that 4 days of the hardcore race or whatever, like it's all that he's doing.
Right. Yeah.
In that time.
Yeah.
But afterward, he's free to do other things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the rating commitment. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying like with the rating side of things, it's like that week, that basically like probably the month before any raid release, and then it's the 2 weeks of the raid. So it's like a 6 week sort of time investment, but it's not 12 hours, 18 hour days. It's just like making sure you do all the stuff on the PTR, you know, logging in, make sure you're there for strat discussions and going through the walkthroughs. And then it's like you just blast for 2 weeks and then you're done. So, but contrary to, or the flip side of that is MDI, which is like literally a week off stream, you know, not making money that way, but then also putting, you know, 12, 18 hour days into sort of going through routes, making your times better. So yeah, it sucks to lose Lighty, because I think he's probably one of the best, you know, just a very good player.
I mean, he's obviously very, very, very good at the game and good at multiple games even. Yeah. And so, yeah, but it does speak to some of the issues with the like structure of the MDI,
mm-hmm.
where like they turned it from this thing where it was like a one-off, like here's this weekend event MDI in BFA, or like the first one, and that was cool. And I watched a bunch of that, but now there's like weekly cups and everything, and I'm not sure why.
It's way too much. Yeah,
like it's this season-long thing, and you know, I liked watching the MDI. I'm not going to tune in every weekend.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not an every weekend thing. I think it's more of like, it'd be cool if it was like a seasonal thing, right? Like you have your one big tournament once a season. You know what I mean? Like with each, and when I say season, I mean like the seasonal affixes. So like give the teams a couple weeks to get into this, and then like do like maybe a cup style, like, you have open qualifiers and then like you have regionals and then finals, right? Which I think that's maybe how they started it. So But that's the format I think that makes sense. This whole like every week show up type thing is just,
it's so much time.
Yeah. Yeah, for the team. So so that is Lighty quitting MDI. But he's not quitting, like we said, not quitting raiding. He'll still raid with old limit and then doing his PoE thing, which if you're into PoE, he's pretty good. So all right. So next up we have Vicarious Vision or Visions. What is the name? Is it Vision or it's Vision, sorry.
It is Visions. So,
Yeah, Vicarious Visions is now a part of Blizzard officially. So if you guys aren't aware, Vicarious Visions was one of the studios that Activision had purchased like years ago, like in the mid 2000s. They worked on a bunch of ports of main games. So a lot of times they would work on like the DS version of X game or like the Game Boy version of a certain series. They did all the Crash Bandicoot GBA versions. So that sort of studio, more of a support studio versus like a headliner. But what you probably most know them for is they did a lot of work on Destiny 2's Warmind pack or expansion. They think they were the main developer there.
I'm not much of a Destiny player. Do you play?
Yeah, I play. I play like
Warmind received, I guess.
Very well, actually. Yeah, it was probably one of the high. I would say there's probably always, there were some issues around that, but it was one of the better expansions that year, which was Destiny 2's first year. So fairly good. I mean, very well regarded, at least studio, right? In terms of like what they can do. But they are now officially part of Blizzard. And it's funny, they're actually replacing Team One at Blizzard. So if you're not familiar with like the team structure of Blizzard, they basically number their teams. And like at a certain point, like Team Two was WoW, Team One was all their classic games, Team Three was like Diablo, I think. But in any event, Team One was all their classic games. So Team One worked on Warcraft Reforged, a lot of the upkeep of the old games, moving them onto like modern platforms, right? Like now you can play Brood War or whatever, things like that. They did all that work. But they were also they're responsible for Warcraft Reforged, which was not very well received. And they had previously
We had one of our raiders that was a huge fan of Warcraft 3 and was like, you know, when Warcraft 3 comes out or Reforged comes out, I'm gone. WoW's in a bad state. This was around the end of Eternal Palace. He was like, WoW's not in a great state. You know, I'm going to go play Warcraft 3 Reforged. And like literally the day after it came out, he was like, I regret everything. Do you guys have a raid spot?
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I returned it. Like, I bought it, played it for like 2 hours, and was like, this is awful. So, yeah, and this team, I mean, after WoW Classic came out, primarily, you know, the WoW Classic team, it was absorbed by them. So it was mostly working on WoW Classic. But yeah, so now Vicarious Visions coming in is going to take that work. I guess the old Team One Blizzard team is going to move to Diablo 4, support them. But yeah, so this is actually big in terms of like classic games. The rumor is, and a bunch of people have said this, but Vicarious Visions will now take over the development of Diablo 2 Reborn or whatever they're calling their remastered Diablo 2, which is good. I think Vicarious Visions ends up being all the stuff that they've worked on, I've enjoyed that I've known about. So it's hopefully good. But yeah, they're now officially no longer Vicarious Visions. I guess they're going to be Blizzard's, you know, part of Blizzard. They're based in Albany, New York, too. So it'll be interesting to see how that East Coast, West Coast thing works with them. So cool. So that was fun news. Now we get into something that I am probably maybe the only person that is interested in this, but I really love this.
I read through this.
Oh, you read through? I actually watched the thing. So sorry, before we get too much ahead of ourselves. One of the security engineers at Blizzard gave a presentation on a Splunk conference. So at a high level, I'm not going to get too much into it. Splunk is basically like a big old database. You put a bunch of data into it, and you can run a bunch of really cool queries on that data. It does a bunch of correlation. It's interesting to see, like, you can just dump things into it, pull out interesting, facts or information and correlating data together. At a 30,000-foot level, people actually know what Splunk is. They're probably like, you're an idiot. But generally speaking, that's what it does. In any event, Blizzard used Splunk essentially to basically put all of the transaction data into it. And this guy,
options and mail and trades, all like the entire like the the ledger of the entire World of Warcraft economy across all servers, including stuff like guild bank transfers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Into this. Yeah, which ended up being like what? It was like over 100 trillion or 100 million, sorry, like events. Trying to correlate those together, it was like billions of gold being run through World of Warcraft today. I think they said like 21 billion gold is transferred throughout the entire ecosystem. But there's really some interesting tidbits of information from this. And I pulled out a couple just over on the top of my head, which was the biggest thing is like the difference between WoW Classic trading and WoW Retail trading is like almost half of all transactions happen through trading an individual person in WoW Classic.
Yeah.
Versus like, which is crazy. Which on retail, it's like that, like it's not even 25%. It's like over 75% of transactions through the auction house, like not having to talk to anybody. Which was interesting, some of the trending. And then he went on to basically talk about like how they built the system and things like that. But towards the end, he sort of talks about how they've identified fraud in the system, which is like they basically have all the transaction data, so they know how much an item generally sells for. And they can tell you what that item potentially will sell for in the future based on its trending data. And what they find is that gold sellers a lot of times will take innocuous items like linen cloth, and instead of selling it for like 30 silver a piece, they'll sell it for 100 gold a piece. And that'll be an outlier. And what they'll do is they'll see that certain individuals sell that gold or sell that item, but they'll also see certain like the same set of individuals also buy that item. And they can build basically like a spider map of like this person posts high cost items and these people around him or her buy those same items. And you sort of get clusters of where the actual gold sellers are. And then you can kind of follow the gold through the system. And that's how he said like they've been able to not sort of like you do like whack-a-mole with gold sellers, but actually be very targeted and say like, this is how we find out people are moving gold or selling gold.
Yeah.
Which actually, I find is really interesting.
It's super fascinating. That's actually, so stuff like that is part of what I did my PhD in. Which the hard part for them is really getting the transaction data in a state that they can use it, which is why this Splunk is the database. He's presenting it at a conference for that database. And mm-hmm. so that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's super cool.
It was funny. They put some stats down, like the original incarnation of this, just to basically query for one item and the price of it, took 30 minutes the first time over the course of the database. And then like that was the minute you wanted to add any sort of variation, like one item plus something else, it timed out. Like the query just wouldn't run. So it was a really interesting talk. So if you're into that sort of tech stuff, check it out. Icy Veins actually posted the article on it, but it's up on like the Splunk conference like website, like all, where they post all their talk. So
yeah, next time I do stuff with lots of Twitter data, I may take a look at that.
Yeah. So cool. So that is that interesting tech piece. And the final story that I pulled was just Raider.io did a story with some Limit guys, just interviewing them on the Race for World First. Really nothing too crazy was talked about other than... nothing really interesting. I mean, other than like everybody hates Sludgefist, or sorry, everybody hates Stone Sludge. Legion.
Sludgefist people liked because Sludgefist is the boss that was like very tightly tuned.
Yeah,
but it was correctly tuned and not loaded with bullshit.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody loved Sludge. Everyone hated Stonefist generals, and people basically said like, if phase one of Denathrius was more interesting, Denathrius would end up being probably a top tier boss for them because two and three are really, really solid. Phases two and three, sorry. So,
yeah. They did comment on like things like Enerva having, like, she's got mechanics, but the whole gimmick of the fight is the canisters. And on Mythic, the play is to ignore the canisters because of the Mythic change. Yeah. Like the Mythic change actually just reduces the complexity of the fight.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, you could. I think on our kill we end up clicking twice, and it's really just so we don't get like bad level two overlaps.
There's a strat that clicks twice that basically, which I guess this is the enraged timer depends on. Actually, not just your total DPS, but your DPS within each phase, which makes it
fun
to try and figure out what your DPS target is. But in general, clicking canisters reduces the DPS, the time you have, the range timer. There is a way to do it that it increases it by a small amount. But as a trade-off, the ticking raid damage from doing that is a lot. That stuff hurts. So we started off with the clicking it, and then realized we had enough damage to just kill it without clicking anything. Just did that.
I think we did two clicks and on our kills. I don't know if we click anymore, but at least on our first kill we ended up clicking. So
I was that boss is full of bullshit though. I hate that boss. I love that boss and I hate that boss. But no raid stuff today.
So I mean, other than that, interview was pretty interesting. But yeah, nothing too crazy. And they, I mean, also they just said solid raid, like top sort of tier like, raid. Even in terms of like
all of them put it in like the 8 or 9 of 10 range. And if not for stuff like Stone Legion being horribly broken, would have been even better.
Yeah, so it was a good interview. Check it out. It's like THD Atlas Scoop. So.
It did like it threw a little bit of shade at Blizzard, and one of them said that this tier was better than any tier that they put out in BFA. I'm curious, do you agree with that?
I actually really liked BOD, weirdly enough, but yeah, not like if the rest of the like if this is the low bar of entry level, like I feel like Shadowlands generally will be good in terms of rating, but I don't know if it was better than everyone. I have a soft spot for BOD. I actually really like Jaina as a fight. I think Jaina is a better fight than Denathrius, just in terms of like mechanics and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I could see it. I like what's the Nyalotha? Sorry, it was like, I didn't like, was the one before Nyalotha?
Was that BOD? Colonel Palace.
Oh yeah, fuck that ball. Fuck Zara.
Yeah, that one.
I'm on board. I'm on board that yes. I don't think BOD is enough to save it. Like yeah.
Like I mean, okay, BOD. If you think BOD is better than Nathria, well, I disagree. But that would mean that it is not better than literally every raid in BFA, in your opinion. Like, and that's valid. I do think of the tiers in BFA, BOD was on the better end. I don't think it's better than Nathria.
That's fair. I mean, if it's better, it's a slim better, not a, step ahead. Yeah.
I do think, and in my opinion, it really comes down to your opinions on the last two bosses.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Agreed. Oh God, no. The last two bosses of
BOD.
Yeah, but that bridge boss was bad.
Yeah, that bridge boss was bad.
Fuck.
Jaina was bad too, but
I liked it. Okay, you know what? Let's not get into it, but I'll agree. We've
talked a lot about Jaina elsewhere on this podcast. So we're not going to rehash it tonight.
Cool. All right, so then now we're into topic. So like Emerson said, tonight's just sort of a grab bag of topics. We sort of didn't want to talk about the raid too much. So we sort of just wanted to touch on a couple of things that either we haven't had a chance to really deep dive into or just new topics on like things we probably haven't talked about at all.
And some of it is a little bit me not wanting to be like my rating schedule is really awkward for where this podcast sits in the week. Like yesterday's our farm night. So I haven't actually done I've done like a night of prog since last week.
Yeah.
When we talked. So I haven't I've barely touched Council of Blood actually because our reclear was a shit show we killed a Nerva for the first time last week, but their reclear was a shit show. And we spent an hour and a half on Zymox. And
so did we. I was actually gonna put that in the notes. It was like a topic of like, does your raid go through this whole like there is one boss every week you just suck at? And it might be the same boss, but a lot of times it's a different boss.
So. I talked about this last week. We spent like 2 hours on Huntsman last week for no goddamn reason. Huntsman of all bosses. It was sad. But it happens and it's now we're getting into raid stuff. But that happened because of like this intersection of people phoning it in a little bit on the boss, which would have been fine if our DPS hadn't changed to the point that suddenly all the Sin Seekers were different.
Oh, God.
Like, we hit the DPS breakpoint where your third Sin Seeker happens in phase... Sorry, your second Sin Seeker happens in phase two instead of phase one. And it shifted one of them. And so it needed to go from a group soak to an immune soak. And people weren't prepared for it.
Oh, God.
That's funny. There were other issues as well, but that was, we would have killed it in two pulls if that hadn't been the case. But
yeah. Yeah, that was our Zymok with people just like not doing seeds, forgetting to drop cooldowns, like just, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we spent, I think, an hour on that.
Our reclaim was much cleaner this week. We got through 6 of 10 last night. So council all the time tomorrow.
Nice. Awesome. Cool. All right. So yeah. Enough raiding.
No more raid stuff this week.
Let's get into some of the topics. So I guess we'll just kind of hit them. I'll talk through the ones that I wrote. And yeah, we can do it that way. So first up for me, I want to talk a little bit about Torghast for alts. And honestly, this is probably a 5-minute thing, but it's the most frustrating thing I've ever done. And it's actually not because, so number, I think the biggest thing people are going to point to is like, you have to grind up all 8 layers again on your halt. That sucks. What actually sucks worse are the story quests that send you into Torghast in the middle, because the problem is none of those count. So like,
yes,
if you actually wanted to mainline getting 8 layers on getting your soul ash, you can do that. But then like you have the story quests intermingled, and like, for me, as someone who, like, I literally do things as they're presented in front of me. So, like, when I did it on my monk, it was very straightforward. Like, one story quest, do my layers, and we're done. But, like, on a new wall, all the layers are open. I have all these story quests that come at me. I'm, like, so confused. So, like, I literally spent on my paladin when I first leveled it. Like, I did, like, 4 story runs in a row. Then was like, all right, cool. Like, let me go finish my layers for the week. I'll get up to 8.
And then you had to go back in the layers.
I was layer 1. I had to do grind my way all the way up. I was so pissed. So like, it's just, they need to make that somehow clear, or like make that, like if they made the layers account wide, I think that's like the easiest solution here. Like once clear layer 7, clear it everywhere on your account. It's open. Yeah. But the other thing that they might, like maybe they do, is like make the story quests like give you levels, like count as doing a layer, because that would also help.
Did you see there is, so the week that we got the Bane quest, he was actually spawning in the layers at the end. You couldn't free him there, but all the NPCs were there.
Oh, really? No, I didn't notice that.
But the RP event didn't trigger. I don't know if it was just a bug and it happened to me, or if it was a consistent thing, but it definitely happened. And like, I was super confused when I got to the end of it. And like, I have the story quest, but I definitely didn't go in the story version. Like, this was a layer 8. What gives?
That's so weird.
They could do it. The thing is that they want to make sure when people are doing their story ones that they can complete them.
Yeah, so, and it's like
forcing it to be layer 1 through the special thing, I guess, does that.
Yeah, but it's just, it's so annoying and confusing in terms of like,
yeah,
as you level up, it's like, great, I get to grind out my 6 Torghast or whatever, and then it's like, oh, LOL, you actually have to do 12 now because you're an idiot and did all the story ones first. So, that was
super. The story ones are separate all the time. Like,
yeah, I know I'm also now, but like, I don't, like when I'm doing it, it's like, no, in my head.
Yeah. I have basically dropped my paladin now that we've killed Sun King. You know, I won't be playing it on any of the other fights for progression. I might play it as an alt afterwards, but for right now, I want to spend time on other things, and that means not doing Torghast, not doing weekly keys or arenas or whatever on it.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna cap Soul Ash on my paladin and then be done for the weeklies with him. But
also, I have a rank 4 on my paladin. I got the rank 4 of the Haste Legendary, and it's good enough.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, that's my Torghast topic. My little mini rant on.
Yeah,
how awful it is.
Torghast is one of those things where it's very clear that there is a pretty big disconnect between what the developers and designers thought they were producing and what the community actually thought they were getting.
Yeah, and it's funny. So maybe we could spend a little bit more time, but I have been doing a bunch of the twisting corridors, right? So I ground up, I finished, so I've been doing it with a friend. We basically spend like an hour on an off night and do a layer. So we just did layer 6 last night. And that's where the first time it actually got ridiculous.
Yeah.
In terms of like, I can't even put it into words, but like mobs would just one shot me. Like it's, and it's not that like, oh, like I messed up and I pulled too much. It's like I pulled one elite mob
and it killed you,
hit it twice, and then it hit me for 90,000 damage. I only had like 70,000 health, which is still like crazy in terms of the numbers, but it's like, so then luckily my buddy's a mage. So literally I would go in, stun it, do a little bit of damage, get a bunch of aggro, and then I just ran around and kited it and would taunt it if it looked.
Ooh, that sounds like Mythic Plus.
Yeah, so it's just, that's not fun. Like, I get it that Twisting Corridors is like a roguelike and maybe we got bad powers to start, but like a mob hitting me for 90k means I literally only pick up HP talents, right?
Yeah.
So that's,
I mean, that's one thing as well that hasn't translated at all really from actual roguelikes. Like if you play a roguelike, damage is avoidable.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And there's a bunch of stuff in Torghast that is avoidable damage. But then there's also the auto attacks that just fuck you up.
Oh yeah.
And those aren't. Like, those are not avoidable. And that's why stuff like Rogues and Warriors had such a bad time and still have a pretty bad time. Oh, and yeah. Windwalker too, I don't think it's correct basically ever to play Windwalker in Torghast.
No.
You should just play Brewmaster.
I mean, I don't know. Like, these things are just crushing me. Like, but maybe I'll try Brewmaster tonight if we do one. But yeah, I mean, that's the other side of it. Is like, I think Torghast just is not, like, it's not, like, it's fun when you crush, which is what I thought I was getting. It's not fun when you literally have to pull one mob, kite it, pull the next mob, kite it, and they have like millions of hit points.
Yeah.
Like, and the funny thing is that, like, I'm fine if that's the way a boss goes. I am not fine if that's the way trash goes. Like, the last boss we did, that's literally what I did. I was ringing. My friend was Noving because he's a mage. Like, I was stunning, like, when I could run in real quick. It was fun. Like, that was interesting, right? Because it was like,
you get to focus on the one thing.
Yeah, like, literally keep it on me and not let it touch me. Awesome. And I'm fine with a boss being like that. I'm not fine if I do that for every trash pull in a lair. Like, that is honestly just, it's like, it's like the opposite of fun. So
I've not done that much twisting corridors yet. Actually, I might do some more tonight now that I think about it. But so I'm only on layer 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I had one that went crazy the other way. You know, I ended up having no cooldown on Touch of Death by floor 3.
Nice.
And then my first power walking in the door was the AoE Touch of Death.
Oh god, yes.
And I just, like, everything that said max HP on it. I got to 500% increased HP from Fortifying Brew.
Oh yeah, I got that talent too.
Plus some of the Oblerion Endurance and the Maret HP. And so I was not able to literally hit Fort Brew in one shot the final boss, but I ended up with, you know, multiple stacks of corrosive dosage as well. So I just sat there and spammed Vivify on myself and Nia's out for like 30 seconds and then hit Fort Brew and touch it at the boss.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're doing twisting corridors, that's the build on any sort of monk, is the touch of death build. Like, just and stack.
That's why I say Brewmaster is always the way to go, because max HP stuff is all multipliers.
That's true.
And Brewmaster has a higher base. Yeah. So.
Interesting. Maybe I'll do that tonight. But yeah, Torghast on alt sucks. Twisting Corridors is okay.
I've been leveling a DK. Will be very slowly working my way through Torghast and hoping that they do something about it before 9.1.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you,
no,
like,
way I'm doing that on like 5 or 6 characters.
Yeah. I can tell you the only reason I got it done on my Paladin was because my friends were also doing it on their alts. So, like,
yeah.
It made it better to do it with like 3 people suffering than like.
Oh, yeah. It's actually, I like Torghast's group content. Torghast is a lot of fun to do with just like a couple random guildies. Like, you don't have to think too hard about it.
Yeah. It makes it a little bit easier to swallow when you don't get the powers you need. So, yeah, that's not too bad. It's not too bad. Cool. Any other Torghast stuff before we move on to the next topic? No. Cool. So the next topic I had, which I think maybe can cut into potentially, was really around the MDI and particularly like the presentation of it. So I didn't want to talk too much about like comps and like how they're doing the keys, because I think that could be a whole different topic. But my focus was actually going to be more on like the UI and how they present it, because I think it's awful.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I mean, people are complaining about the MDI UI where they have like the one big screen.
Yep.
That's not even that big. It takes up like 40% of the screen space.
Yeah.
And one tiny screen that you can't see anything on.
Yeah. So I'm fine with that. So like the idea is like, I'm fine with like big screen, small screen, right? Maybe they can offset it. Right. Like I think that sort of view works. And they made a couple of changes today that I think make sense. But I think the problem is like the UI itself. So the way it's laid out for people who don't know is, if you think of the UI, is basically you have a main team playing. They'll focus on one player. That'll be the main screen. And then one of the two corners, bottom left or bottom right, depending, will be the second team and one of their main players. So you'll be able to see like live gameplay from each. And then at the top, you'll have the team HP bars. So all five players' HP bars, one on the left, one on the right, with their cooldowns underneath of them. So you'll be able to see like what they have up, what they have active, if you squint, because that's going to be one of the things I bring up. And then the center is like all the stats of the dungeon. So like what dungeon it is, what key level, what are the affixes, what's the trash percentage, how many deaths they have, and then how many bosses have they killed, right? So the biggest problem I have, and this is something that I think PvP actually does so much better. Like if you've ever watched any of the AWS stuff, they do it so much better, is cooldown usage. So like whenever a player, and this is how it works in PvP, whenever a player uses a cooldown, depending on what it is, their actual player icon will glow. So you'll be able to see, like, if you look over, like, there'll be like a fire, if like a paladin pops wings, there'll be like a fiery thing around the paladin icon. And then
I actually haven't watched any of the PvP tournaments. That's cool.
And then like under, they still have the same bar underneath that says, here's all the cooldowns. So like the wings will be lit up, but you'll be able to see first, like paladin just pops something that's fiery and does damage. That things are about to pop off. They also do the inverse, like when you pop a defensive. So if you pop like divine shield or something, it'll be a blue shield over your player icon, kind of pulsing and glowing, which I think is very nice in terms of visually identifying something's happened, right? Like on the screen, you can see somebody doing a big pull. Great. But what you can't see are like, what
when their damage like goes through the roof, but sometimes it's disconnected. And a lot of the time what happens is like, I don't know, it's hard to tell they did big damage because there were 400 mobs in the pull.
Yeah.
And they were able to do that pull because they assign, you know, wild spirits and combustion and true shot and whatever.
Yeah.
God only knows other cooldowns to make those pulls work.
Yeah, and it was interesting. The reason it popped into my head was actually specifically Echo's run of Theater of Pain. They talked about pulling a prideful right before the boss with the chains. I forget his name.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, is that the Merez on his Windwalker was really low on damage. And the reason was, is because he didn't pop any cooldowns. And the Hunter started very high, but then got overtaken by the Mage because the Hunter popped Wild Spirits on the trash that spawned the prideful. And the Mage saved his combustion for the prideful. And it's like, from my perspective, like knowing that, is interesting, right? And it's so hard to see these tiny little icons because there's no indication when they pop them. So like my idea was essentially like just being better about presenting when cooldowns are used, even at like a basic level of like doing the whole like I don't know if it's Omni CC, but like when something comes off cooldown your screen, there's like a transparent icon that pops in the middle of your screen and then fades away, right, as things come off cooldown. Like do that in terms of things when they press it. I mean, or like drop down underneath their player name a larger icon that says I've just used combustion or I just used a damage cooldown. Yeah. Similar to like the way the AWS does it. Because that to me is like gives more context to what they're actually doing and why they're pulling something, right? They could also do something better about saying like, here's things that are coming off cooldown shortly. So it's like you're about to have wings or you're about to have combust in like 15 seconds. So the pull now is going to be smaller, but the next pull is going to be bigger because we'll have cooldowns for it.
And that's actually something as well I think would help the commentary.
100%. 100%.
like the commentary in BFA by the end of the expansion, you can only hear them tell you how to pull King's Rest so many times and why they're kiting the mobs and why they're doing this and that so many times.
Yeah.
And this is just an additional, you know, element of, you know, oh, hey, and maybe this would, I mean, I'm sure this would get old too eventually. Like, oh, look, they're doing a big pull. Oh, look, there's the combustion. Oh, no, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah. And I think it probably would get old, but I think it would be more impactful than the ginger, like, their tank's taking a ton of damage. They might lose them. Whole group's taking a ton of damage. Like, and I granted, like, these, it's not, no slight of the commentators themselves. Like, I'm not saying
they're literally doing,
they probably see the same UI we see as viewers. So it's like they're trying to piece together the same thing that we are, and it's probably not as helpful. But I think something like that, if they just did better about cooldown usage, I think helps a bunch of stuff in terms of like how you view it as a viewer. And even something like then my mind starts racing, because now I'm like, dude, we could do this. Is like when they use a cooldown, like in the bottom left or right corner, wherever the other team isn't playing, it like pops it up like combustion and gives like a quick little thing that's like plus damage or like increases damage. So like if you know nothing about WoW, or if you only play one class, you don't know everybody else's class's abilities, it gives you an idea of like combustion, more damage, get it on the same page, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of maybe brings people in that way.
I mean, like, combustion is maybe one of the worst examples of this, because when the mage hits combustion, they literally light on fire.
Yeah. So it's slightly easier to see.
Then there's stuff like Wild Spirits where they hit it and there's a blue effect on the ground for 2 seconds and then it goes away.
Yeah.
Or True Shot where there's almost no animation. You know?
Or yeah, it's very slight. Yeah.
A lot of these other things, like if you've ever hit Zuin in a trash bag and just completely lost track of it, even if there's only like 7 or 8 mobs, some of them are pretty big.
Right.
And Zuin will absolutely bury himself like in like behind one, in front of another, and inside a third.
Yeah.
And be completely invisible.
Yeah. And then, I mean, and it would also extend to like defensives too, if you think about it, because a lot of defensives don't have the greatest animations, right? In terms of like knowing like when they're on. So, that was my biggest thing with watching this, was like how much better the Arena series does this versus like MDI. And I don't know if they're two different teams, or like the UI and like actual spectator portion of it is like not as up to par, right? Because they've been doing Arena things forever. Like MDI is fairly recent. So, I was just thinking about like if they could make the UI better, just even if they made cooldowns easier to see, like it would ultimately, I think, help the overall viewer experience in terms of like understanding when things are happening. And in turn, like in my mind, I basically say the casters see the same things we do. So it's like hopefully it makes the casting better, right? Just the over, like the voiceovers and stuff like that of what they do. That was my big point about MDI, and it's like the UI just needs to be better. So
I did want to touch a little bit on the meta, both for the MDI and for the like live keys, because if you've actually, let me actually pull this up if I can, because it's very purple. Very, very
purple. Very, very purple. Very purple.
Yeah. So if I pull this up, this is for the time trials. Very, very purple. Look, we got one. There's a brewmaster, a single brewmaster in the 20th fastest run for plus 18 theaters of pain.
There we go. Represent. Boys.
And a prop paladin. Oh boy. There are a couple Guardian Druids up here. Like the third fastest run for Halls of Atonement is a Guardian Druid. And it's not like Monk is dead. Monk is definitely still one of the best DPS.
That's for sure.
But yeah, it's very purple right now. And Tettles this week posted something on Wowhead that went over all the different roles and like how the meta is shaping up on live keys more so than on MDI kind of keys. And I don't know. It's an interesting read. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I mean, go read. Like I won't do it justice trying to explain the whole thing in like a 30-second blurb on the podcast, but he goes into a lot of the reasons why things are the way they are. And I do think it is interesting that he says something that, you know, I would not have agreed with at the prior to the beginning of the expansion, but I will 100% agree with now. The Brewmaster is definitely more of a glass cannon style of tank, which is wild because we still have Stagger, but the Stagger percent is lower. There's a lot more damage to this just ignoring it, and there's enough actual unavoidable raid damage now that you can't just bring a healer that can just tunnel the tank.
Oh yeah,
where like in BFA, in a lot of instances, you could completely stop outgoing raid damage. There was some random targeting stuff that still happened. It was kind of dumb, but most pulls the raid damage could be stopped, and that meant that the main thing you had to heal was the tank.
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't interesting. I read through like I think half of it, really just the healer section. But it was funny that they were like, the healers are your flex covenant choices, which I thought was interesting. Which makes sense, because I think in terms of like, I guess in terms of damage, there is a pretty big variance with certain DPS classes. So in terms of what covenant they've chosen.
But and I mean, tanks are almost mono Kyrian. Almost across the board. Everybody's Kyrian. Even like Brewmaster, you can make an argument for. I don't think in high keys you can make an argument to play anything but Kyrian Brewmaster. High keys.
Yeah.
Because of how important actual cooldowns are to that. Having an actual cooldown that you can use to make a hard pull easier.
Yeah.
Is actually like so important. And then there's the things where like Night Fae you have to kite out of, and Bone Dust Brew actually still fine, totally reasonable, but Fleshcraft sucks ass. So
yeah. Having the pot's nice. So but yeah, I think it was interesting in terms of the meta. It's funny, the comps pretty much were Vengeance, Disc, and then a combination of like Mage, DK, Hunter, Windwalker, basically in terms of like, at least in the MDI comp. So, it was still, it was still fun. It was nice to see some of the stuff they were doing, some of the pulls they were doing.
The Necrotic Wake Snap?
I did not actually get to see that. So, okay, I'll have to go back and review.
What they do is they send a Hunter or Rogue up into the upper necropolis with tricks or misdirection on the tank. The tank is downstairs, and they pull everything, and you might be wondering, how does the Hunter or Rogue get back down? And the answer is they don't, they die.
Gotcha.
But it's okay, because somewhat ironically, of the new way snapping works in Shadowlands. So snapping in BFA, for those that remember it, you would jump or somehow get somewhere that mobs couldn't path to, and they would teleport to you in many cases. Like, it varied from point to point and from dungeon to dungeon. Sometimes they would teleport you to them and instantly kill you. Sometimes they would teleport to you and like instantly group up and be like this super giga death grip.
Yep.
Well, now there's this 8-second delay, and then they teleport to you, evade for a little bit, but also don't hit you, and then are attackable. So, 8 seconds later, they all start appearing, like popping in where the tank is. That's they hilarious. Wait for them to stop evading, and they hit the orb and the spear on them, and because they're all stacked, the spear damage is nuts.
Oh my god, I didn't realize. Yeah, holy shit.
And they do the entire necropolis in one pull.
That's so, and because so
they
cool.
snap them, like there's like the annoying mobs that just like have this like throw disgusting whatever at you.
Yeah.
That are really a pain to move. They're all stacked.
God. That's so cool. I didn't I have to go back and see that. That's crazy. I did see the rogue with like Master Assassin when being in stealth and using the orb, which means like the orb will crit every time it pulses based on
Oh my god, I did not see that.
Yeah, so like there are a couple pulls where like the rogue is literally doing like 5-6 times the DPS of anybody else, because literally they just stay in stealth, master assassin out. I don't know if it's an ability or like a passive based on like your first hit coming out of stealth, but they just use the orb in stealth and it starts pulsing at 100% crit rate. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. Yeah. So but yeah, there's been, that's interesting. That's wild. Fun. Yeah. But yeah, the pulls still seem big. I'm not going to lie. So I don't know, like AoE caps be damned. Like,
yeah, I mean,
pulls seem big.
Very early AoE caps be damned.
Yeah. And Night Elves are huge.
Interesting that they're still in the running because they are AoE capped on basically everything.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
But I mean, you do have to single target some things sometimes.
Yeah, Boston and stuff. I mean, they skip a ton of Pridefuls, which I find interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, I know Pridefuls are better than Reaping. Like, Reaping was nothing. There was no upside to doing Reaping.
Right.
Like, it was all downside. Prideful at least like gives you this big damage buff, and I would say you will basically never see pugs skipping Pridefuls.
No, you'll always use them for sure.
But they, it turns out, still not time efficient to do a single target thing, even when it gives you a massive damage buff after it.
Yeah, I did see one time where it was funny. The it was the two of the lower teams playing later today. They were in spires and they were basically going, they'd killed the third boss, spawned a prideful, and one team just night elfed it off and went up to kill the three mobs at the top before the final boss. And another team killed the prideful, rode it up, and then did the three mobs at the same time. And even though they lost about half the prideful buff on just that float up, they still killed those three mobs before the other team. Which I find crazy, because like in other instances, right, skipping the prideful, like in everything that you had seen previously in MDI, most teams have been skipping pridefuls they didn't need, but this team like literally spent the time, killed it, and was able to use that on those final three mobs, which, you know, the other team probably should have maybe thought about that. But
yeah, I mean, those three mini bosses are scary. Okay,
particularly if you pull them all at the same time, which is what they do.
I did that in a low key the first week, because that's what we did on you know, heroic.
Yeah.
And Mythic Zero. And that was a mistake.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Was a mistake. We died.
Yeah, for sure. So cool. So yeah, that's MDI. I don't know if you have any other quick tidbits, but change the UI, Blizzard, please.
Like, yeah.
Make it easier to see cooldowns, and I think I'll be happy. So so cool. So next up is probably another little mini rant from my side, which was on anima collection rates. So, okay, look, it shouldn't cost 5,000 fucking anima when I'm getting 35 a kill in Mythic Plus or on a like a raid boss.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, it's honestly like, I get it. They want this to be a gated thing. And I, to be fair, like I literally did not use souls because I was like, that's going to be the thing that gates me. Like week one, I'm like, getting tons of anima because I'm doing a bunch of world quests. It's been great. You know, I'm going to be gated by souls, which is fine, but I'll collect all this anima. I have a huge storage. Be perfect. And then, like, you start running out of those, like, dungeon quests that give, like, 700 anima, and like, the raid one. And, like, all this other, like, first time you're doing story missions giving tons of anima. And now it's like, I literally struggle. Not that I struggle. This, I'm actually being a little bit overselling this a little bit, but it's no longer like log in on Tuesday, get my 1,000 anima by like 30 minutes in. It's like I probably didn't complete that quest until like Thursday this week when we I think we killed a couple of like heroic bosses before we went into council. So it's like, it's not terrible, but it's still like anima is just so low and everything costs so much. Like,
you want to know the easiest way to get anima?
Oh god, how?
PvP week.
Is it PvP?
It is PvP. There's a weekly every week. There's always two, one for unrated PvP and one for rated PvP.
Yeah.
Each of them gives 750 anima.
Small correction. Only the rated version gives 750 anima. The unrated one gives 250.
God.
The rated BG one, if it's up, 2 BG wins. Or... That's fine. It's 1,500 honor. A win, a rated battleground, gives 1,000 honor. A loss gives 400.
So I'd say like two or three. Yeah. As long as you get one win, it's like two or three. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
It's, and the unrated one, mostly a trap, I would say, because it can take a long time because it's unrated PvP.
Yeah.
But doing the weekly one for arenas, also not that much time for how much anima it gives. You get way more anima from doing that weekly than you do for doing raid. Like,
it's so backward. Yeah, and it's just like everything costs so much. Like,
so this is something I think is strange as well. There's the weekly dungeon quests.
Yeah.
They give 350.
Something like that, yeah. There's not a lot.
There's the weekly PvP ones. They give 750. There's two of each of those.
Yeah.
There's none for raid.
Yeah, that is actually odd. Like killing a certain number of bosses.
Right. Or killing a specific boss. Like, here's a bounty on Zymox this week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. There should be. Although, to be fair, if you could do it in LFR, then it's, like, going to be 250 honor. Or anima. It's going to be lower.
I mean, maybe that's why the dungeon ones are 350, because you can do them in normal.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But,
I mean, the unrated PvP one is still...
It's true, 750.
750. You do.
I don't get it. Yeah. Then I was like looking at buying like some of the cosmetic, like the armor stuff, which because I sold a bunch of my, like before I switched, I'd sold a bunch of my Kyrian armor. I was like, oh, maybe one day like I'll buy it and like upgrade it and like have a cool transmog. And I was like, nope, because it's literally like 8,000 anima a piece.
Yeah.
I don't, like, where do you, why?
Yeah.
I just don't, yeah. It seems like
I went full Kyrian transmog on my monk. It looks so ridiculous.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's just I don't get the like the reward thought process here by Blizzard in terms of like
it's so grindy.
Yeah. Like there's a balance. Like I don't expect everything to happen week two, but like I also looking at the numbers, like I don't want to be doing this for the next 2 years. Like I don't want a year and a half from now being like finally got my final sanctum upgrade because I got the 15,000 anima I needed and it took me a month and a half. Like, it's just, I don't get it.
And that's not even counting the mounts.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about.
It's, yeah.
When I said I went full Kyrian transmog, I went with a campaign transmog that you get for free.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that.
There is no way I spent anima on the other stuff. I don't remember if this was while we were recording or before we were recording, but I was talking about saving the anima items.
Oh yeah, before we started, yeah.
For when I go back to Night Fae. So I got the rank 2 transport network for Kyrian and then stopped. And I'm not even depositing anima. Because you don't need to for the weekly quest.
Yeah.
You just need to collect it.
That's so funny. God. Yeah, anima's just, I don't know. It's just a weird thing that I'm not a huge fan of. So
it's, I don't know. It feels like, again, almost every part of the game, except for PvP, has the rewards seriously undershot in terms of, like, rates.
Yeah. I know, I'd agree there. Yeah, because I mean, like 35 anima for like a mythic boss kill just seems like
the worst part. You get 35 anima for an LFR boss kill too.
Yeah, plus which is
reward for completing the wing.
Which is, I'm speechless because that's just stupid. Like, it's just, it does not make sense. Like, I got more arc. What is it? What was the legion? What was the artifact? Not artifact knowledge. That was the increase, but it was like artifact power.
No, you got the same for, you got in BFA at least the same AP for every difficulty.
Oh really?
Yeah.
But it was substantially more in terms of like the levels, I mean, right?
No. All right. You want to know about the history of AP rewards from boss kills in BFA? Because
I actually don't remember. So maybe I'm thinking.
So it started. I don't remember the actual number. I want to say like 75 AP for a boss kill.
Okay.
Which, if you remember the like amounts that you needed, was absolute trash. You could clear the entire instance and get not even a quarter of a single level on your neck at the very beginning of the tier. even if you were a pleb like me who refused to do islands past the weekly quest.
Mm-hmm.
They buffed it. By the beginning of BOD, it was up to 200 anima per boss kill. And I am AP. Mm-hmm. That's still not a lot with where we were in the AP curve at the time.
Right.
But it was better, over double. It got buffed again in Eternal Palace to 300 AP. So at this point, we are at almost five times the initial amount of AP that we got from boss kills in patch 8.2.
That's so dumb.
Not the first time that they undershot it. And it was still the whole time you could get it from just doing, you know, the normal version. And that's actually something that we did. We did a raid before, because we raid on the weekend.
Yeah.
When the week before, I want to say Eternal Palace came out, we did full clears of BOD because it was still giving the full amount up until the new raid release.
Oh, right.
Yep, and then it got nerfed because it was no longer current.
Gotcha.
So, like, we were doing that for extra AP. I don't remember if it was until the patch release or until the raid release, but one of those two.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
It's just funny that they make the same mistakes over and over again. Like, not mistakes. Maybe they don't think it's a mistake, but it's just like it's...
I mean, it definitely feels bad. Like, spending 40 minutes doing a dungeon,
mm-hmm,
and getting 35 AP, it's like, or anima, it's like, I got less than one anima a minute.
Yeah.
Doing this dungeon. I'm pretty sure you still get 35 anima from completing an arena match. I don't know if you get it for every match, but I know you can get it. And maybe the rate, I don't think the rate is comparable with Mythic Plus. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's way faster, but.
Yeah, it's just, and then you look at world quests, right, which are reduced in number, and you're getting like maybe 100. Like, I look at the map every day and it's less than 1,000 anima normally on the map at any one time. Which is like
the other day going like, I want to complete my anima weekly, but I don't want to do PvP right now for my weekly quest. How do I do it? I pulled up world quest list and I'm okay, in this zone there's only 200, but you know, that's probably just, you know, bad. That's it's just awesome. Got a lot of non-AP quests up today. Let's go look at the globe. It's 800 anima total, including the world boss, which is 250.
It's honestly crazy to me when, like, and people are thinking like, you can get 800 a day. That's actually pretty good. And then, like, that's only like, if you have a 5,000 anima one, it's only like 6 days or a week, but it's literally a week to get an upgrade, and then it goes up.
And these world quests, like,
they're bad.
These world quests are not fast.
No, like, well, I shouldn't say that they're bad. Sorry,
they're not fast though. It will take you longer than doing a board sweep in BFA. Not as more bad quests now that they're geared, but
I don't know. It's sorry. This is my soapbox, but I dislike when, this is sort of where games lose me, which is when, like, the reward structure does not meet the expectation of when you should get something, right? Like, that is off here, where, like, the scale is off. Because, like, yes, I can grind. Yes, they want to make it a grind. But, like, ultimately, I look at all the anima that I need to collect if I want to max out my sanctum. And I'm looking at literally the next 12 to 18 months of doing this, you know, barring them adding anything new, right? And then if I switch covenants, just add that, just literally add that on top of it. So
like, I dumped 5k, more like 7k anima into my Kyrian covenant that I'm not getting back.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go back to Nightfade.
It just feels bad.
Yeah,
it feels bad for, like, a system that they want to be this cool flavor thing. There's not a lot of player power in this at all, if any, right? Like, I don't think there's any. And it's so not fun to interact with, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
so I have this on there as well, actually, as our next topic. I think all of the covenant sanctum things that you can do with your anima that aren't the transport network, basically, like, aren't the transport network, aren't the mission table. You have your Night Fae have the garden, Kyrian have, you're gonna have to help me on that one, but then Venthyr has the Ember Court thing. Mm-hmm. Necro has Abomination building. Upgrading those costs Anima too? I haven't even, I haven't touched it on Kyrian because I'm not dumping any more Anima into it. But
So when you are like, oh, and now I need to answer this on Kyrian, I had to go to Wowhead and look up what the Kyrian one was because I did not waste Anima when I was Kyrian on it because it's just like wasn't worth it. So yeah, I mean, this, and that's cool flavor stuff. Like I actually, so it's funny that we sort of added this because I should have said this too, but like I actually started doing the Necro one and the Venthyr one, like Necro on my Monk and then and Venthyr on my Paladin because I'm like, I don't care about the transport network. Like I'll deal with flying between areas. Like it's only a portal to Ouroboros. It's not a portal back. So like if it was a portal back, maybe that transport network makes better sense.
But you can set your Hearthstone in your order hall then and take the portal.
But as Necro, I have a Hearthstone that I can put in my order hall.
Oh, do you? Oh, okay.
What are the little fox kids that are new? The new race, the fox people.
Volpera.
And I was like, I wanted to say Venthyr again.
Fox kids, I had no clue what you were on about.
little fox people. That's what they are. So anyway, Volpera has a camp option, so like right. They can like so and like Necros have a very similar. They have a Hearthstone you can attune on Ebony, one of the Soulbind.
Yeah,
you can basically do the same thing. So that's what I do. But in any event, like these things are cool now that I've actually read about them. So like I went and I was like, huh, Emelson brought this up. I should understand what the Kyrian one was because he's going to ask me about it. And then I read the Kyrian one. It's actually kind of cool. It's like a boss rush thing where like you fight a series of bosses. It's like
a boss rush thing and I have no clue what a boss rush thing is.
So okay, do you remember in Mega Man?
Yes.
When you got to Dr. Wily, but you didn't just fight Dr. Wily, there was a stage ahead of him and there was like 12 bosses. You basically but you'd refight the bosses again that you'd already previously defeated.
You would fight one boss and you'd fight the next boss and you'd fight the next boss. Yeah,
and you'd finally get to Wily at the end. Very similar. That's what a boss rush is essentially. So that's what the Kyrian thing is. And then you get like, you can buy upgrades with like items and like, you know, get yourself stronger when you're in there so you can progress further and hopefully live. So yeah, so that's what the Kyrian thing is. But they're all actually pretty interesting. So like the Venthyr one is like a court thing. I just finished the intro and I'm collecting people to invite now.
Yeah.
So that seems fun.
There's just like so much flying around and rank one of the transport network for Venthyr actually kind of has really awkwardly placed portals for doing anything in the zone. Like,
Good
for the campaign. One of them is very good for the campaign quests. The other one is like off in Never Neverland. Yeah. And neither of them is anywhere close to either the dungeons or the raid.
Yeah.
I was like, I did the intro quest. I looked at the amount of like walking around I was going to have to do to get people to come to this stupid party. And I was like,
it's not stupid.
I was like, yeah, this is a problem for future me. After I get my covenant.
I liked it. I think it was cool. I haven't spent much with Necro, but I just started the bomb thing, which I think will be fun. You basically get to craft your own abomination and it's like a companion that fights with you. And you put like different heads and you collect different body parts throughout the world to like make it. So that's cool. The Night Fae one, I'm not Night Fae. I don't know if you did anything with it, but
yeah. So the Night Fae one is really, it's kind of like the farming stuff from MOP. You plant your crops and they grow and you get crafting mats from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is, except that like at rank one, there's no mini game. All you do is you click a seed and you click one of the seeds in your bag to put there and you wait 3 days.
Okay.
So when you rank it up, apparently I haven't ranked it up because I switched to Kyrian. Okay. You get the ability to basically link seeds with other special seeds that like increase, like they can, you can reduce the time it takes them to grow. You can increase the reward quality and they stack in different ways. And
you know what this reminds me of?
Like rank one is literally just you put the seed in, you wait 3 days, you get some shitty fish from the bag. Not even like the green uncommon fish, just like white common desolate leather fish cloth in small quantities. It's like, I waited 3 days for this.
That's so funny.
And that's another one where I went, you know, I'm going to wait until I get the transport network. Not necessarily to rank three, but at least compared to Venthyr, the Night Fae transport network gives you a portal right next to the other side. There's not a flight.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
That's really cool. The Night Fae transport network is a little bit janky because you have to like walk into a mushroom circle and then there's an extra action button that appears after a couple of seconds and then you use that. So it's a little bit annoying to use as opposed to like the Venthyr one where you just walk in a mirror.
And yeah.
Or the Kyrian one, which is literally just a flight path.
Yeah, that's funny. It's just a flight point. Yeah, that's the garden thing sounds funny because it reminds me a lot of there was a PoE league like probably three leagues ago called Harvest, where literally you did the same thing, which is like you'd grow certain crops in certain areas and like connect them together. And when like they grew, you'd basically in PoE, you'd fight monsters and they would drop a specific thing based on how you like made them all together.
Yeah. The Night Fae one, like it depends on which kind of seed you use. There's one different kind of seed for each covenant and they come in different rarities. And then you can try and boost the rewards and they give mounts and transmog and toys and that kind of thing. But without the ability to actually like connect the seeds together, you literally can't get any of the cool shit. You can't get anything useful whatsoever for.
Well, rank one's just teaching you how to like garden, right? Like you to plant some
rank
seeds.
Rank one
you come back,
is so.
You gotta come back later. That's funny.
I don't know. It is made up for somewhat by the fact that the travel network for Night Fae has a dude.
Oh, really?
It's a talking mushroom.
Wait, what? That's awesome.
It is a talking mushroom that runs the mushroom network. That's what their travel network is. Is you literally are teleporting from one circle of mushrooms to another.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool.
And there's a talking mushroom that gives you daily quests and you can get rep and buy toys from him.
That's awesome.
And the rep is disconnected from the transport network ring, so you can have rank one of the transport network and still work on it.
Oh, that's cool.
I hope it didn't reset my mushroom man rep.
That would suck. That would suck. That's
I wonder
awesome.
If I can still get there somehow and do the things. I'd probably have to get like Warlock Summon or something and probably just boot me out, but that would be funny.
Oh, yeah.
Or get stuck there.
That's hilarious. That's so funny. I haven't really engaged much in these things, but it seems like this is like a hidden part of content that I don't know. It'd be cool if Blizzard did something to make it more apparent, because like I didn't know what the A-bomb thing was. So
I feel like if Anima weren't so pinched, it would be a lot easier. Because like on my new characters, I'm not even like all I'm doing is I'm putting the anime into the travel network.
Yeah. Yeah, basically that's it.
Like and they're not maybe I will get like one other thing, depending on what I feel like. But since I expect that a bunch of them are gonna be the same as the Night Fae one, where you just can't get anything good from rank one of the thing. So you have to go to the higher ranks, which costs so much more anima, you know. It goes the same like 1.5k, 5k, 10k. And if I have to go to rank 3 to get the good stuff, like I'm not investing 17.5k anima in a side thing on an alt.
Yeah. Sorry. No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's again, I think it goes back to that like anima just being less prevalent basically gates the stuff behind stuff that's potentially more useful. So I think that really covers like my anima issues, and then now like these cool mini games. Like, I mean, they seem cool. Like, I really now wish I would have spent some time on the Kyrian one, other than just reading about it, because it does seem kind of interesting as something I probably would have enjoyed. But
I might throw. I have like 5k anima in my bags right now, or rather, in my bank. And I might go deposit some. And we'll see if it deposits from your bank. And I hope it doesn't.
Might want to check that before you
wait,
sort
can
of
you deposit, can you like right click individual items and deposit them?
I don't think so. I think you literally there's just that button.
I'm gonna go find out. I'm going to go find out and I'll report back next week.
That's funny. That's funny.
But before we do that, is it time for your favorite part of the show?
I think it is. I think it's time for questions and answers. Yes. So as always, my favorite part of the show, we will answer your questions. Emilson and I, you can send them in. You can tweet at us. You can yell at us in Peak Eternity Discord. You can come watch the show live and yell at them in chat. We will pick them up. But yeah, questions, answers, my favorite time. And we have two questions tonight. So the first one comes from Squee557. Very easy name. Nailed it. And Squee asks, what sort of monk tier set bonuses for each spec would you like to see if Blizzard adds set bonuses back? Whew. It's an open-ended question.
That is a great question.
I did not honestly do much thinking about this in terms of like what bonuses I would like to see. And maybe in terms of even Mistweaver or any of the other ones. But from a general design standpoint, I want to see a set bonus that has some sort of impact on the way I play my class. I think those have always been the more interesting set bonuses in terms of what Blizzard has sort of put in, right? So, you know, in terms of like today as a Mistweaver, right, like I potentially would want to see something that's... See, we already have some legendaries that cover some set bonuses I would have liked to see, but yeah. I mean, something that sort of not fundamentally changes gameplay, but or like changes the way you might use a specific spell, right? Like in terms of like potentially doing something with Essence Font from a Mistweaver perspective, you know, make it less about, you know, the hots or like spreading that and make it more of like even like a focused heal, which we don't need more of, but it would be interesting to see what they might do with something like that. Or, you know, I don't know, give us Eminence or just how about a set bonus gives us Chi? I would be with that.
Wild bonus.
I'd be fine with that. Like you don't call it Chi though. Like be like you summon stacks of a mist, and then you can use that stacks to empower an ability like uplift. We'll call it like mist balls spawn around you. Okay, if you do that, Blizzard, I swear to God, I'll quit. All right, if you give us
they made a legendary brewmaster named Charred Passions.
I know, but I'm just saying if they give us healing spheres as a set bonus, they call it mist balls, whatever they call it. If it's healing spheres, I'm quitting. Swear to God. Literally died on this hill for months over beta, and you couldn't give us healing spheres. But don't do that on us. Actually, to be fair, if they give us healing spheres on a set bonus, I'd love it. I'd actually just play my monk. It'd be terrible, but I'd love it. But yeah, I don't know. I generally don't have a really good idea of what I'd want to see at this point. Just because I haven't really thought about it. But I think like set bonuses that change the way you look at a spell or play with a spell, I think are always the more interesting ones. So
I think it would be cool for Brewmaster. Well, less cool. I think about the part of Brewmaster that they're frustrating and feel bad right now. And one of them is Celestial Brew having such a long cooldown for how long the shield lasts. Like the shield does not last very long. I would love to see, you know, something that, you know, a two piece that attaches brew cooldown reduction to one of our spells that doesn't have it right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe when we actually are using a lot of spells right now rotationally, especially if you're using Charred Passions, you use Spinning Crane Kick rotationally, as well as Blackout Kick, Breath of Fire, Tiger Palm, and Keg Smash, and your rotational brews. So it's like actually a fair few buttons.
Wow. Okay.
There's not one that they could really tack it on, like tack an extra button on, but they could put it on, you know, Blackout Kick or something. Or I don't know, give us a mini Blackout combo where if you go Blackout Kick into Tiger Palm, it does double brew reduction or something.
Obviously.
Something
cool.
Like
that. Yeah.
And then as like a four piece, you know, I don't know, make Celestial Brew cooldown lower or benefit more from brew cooldown reduction, something like that, so that we get more frequent Celestial brews, because that's like, we have Celestial brew and it's great and it's very infrequent, and also take it off the GCD for the love of God. But like, we have a legendary right now that does actively change the way we play. Charred Passions is actually like a pretty substantial rotational change because of the introduction of Spinning Crane Kick and the wonkiness of Spinning Crane Kick being like a 1.5 second channel on a class with a 1 second GCD. Meaning that you can't just like hit Spinning Crane Kick back to back. You have to like always Spinning Crane Kick then something else, and that adds enough by itself that there's some interesting stuff going on. So I don't know that they can do more, and if they did more, I would probably want it to be something that didn't synergize with Charred Passions, just so that it could push in a different direction.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah.
Or if it did, like, don't make it something that plays poorly along with Charred Passions.
Yeah.
Like, don't make it something where it's like, you know, makes you want to cast Tiger Palm, but really only works while you're using Charred Passions or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would suck. And that's the funny thing is, some of the legendaries sort of took the spots of stuff I'd want to see as set bonuses anyway. So I'm trying to think, like, maybe Windwalker would be like, get rid of SEF and replace it with
something
just like
to make Serenity good again.
Oh yeah.
Then you can talent out of SEF and you can play Serenity and everybody can stop complaining about the SEF bugs for a tier before coming back even more uproariously when they have to switch back to SEF the next tier and get really pissy about how buggy it is still.
That's so good. That actually would be a good idea. I like that plan. So we're gonna buff SEF, we're gonna Mistweavers Healing Spheres, and we're gonna brewmaster some cool ability that makes them probably the best spec again for monks to play and potentially the best tank in the game. So
I think it sounds like Mistweaver is really getting the short end of the stick there.
That's par for the course, I feel like, with this whole class.
I mean, maybe we just make each of the Healing Spheres a lay on hands, and like,
people would actively avoid them still. So
I had a hunter yell at me earlier today for walking out of their wild spirits.
That's so good. Yeah, I don't. What did they ever give us healing spirits? Fucking kill them.
Hey,
not actually. I'd just be very upset. I'd quit the game. So
yeah. Abe has a question in chat. Can we get Anom to describe some lore thing?
I mean, I described some lore earlier, didn't I? Before on the pre-show. Yeah, so I described basically the Covenant campaigns. So
yes,
of the ones I've done, so I've done everything but Nightfae. So I've done Venthyr, Kyrian, Necrolord. So Kyrian, for a short explanation, is some bad dudes break something in the Kyrian Order Hall, and we go around and sacrifice people from all the other Covenants to rebuild it. And then at the end, we have an epic battle with the bad guy and win, of course. And Uther's there for some reason. So it's Kyrian. Necrolord is, there's some bad Necrolord bros who are attacking Bastion, and we go and stop them. And then we come back and we get a ziggurat to ride around in. Cool. Nice. And then Venthyr is, what did I say earlier? I think it was really good. It was like the entire campaign is about trying to throw a really awesome party. And then Kael'thas shows up halfway through to ruin that. You have to like talk about all the bad shit he did no one cares about. And then at the end, you still throw that really sweet party. But you were mentioning like, I missed something, because like, I thought it just ended. I thought it just
ended. You said we killed Kael'thas.
Yeah, didn't we? No. Wait, but I'm pretty sure he was there.
He was there. He was totally there.
But we didn't kill him?
So, I want to say that
we killed him. We killed him.
He's not dead. Dead. We fought him. He's a lich, Anom.
We're in the shadow. He has nowhere to go. Literally nowhere to go. You die here.
I don't even know if we actually killed him or if he did I run away.
I honestly have no idea.
But I remember doing it, and I was like, wow, he left out some important details.
Oh, really? I'll have to rewatch the Noble thing. Like
I'm going to have to go and watch the last Noble Venthi video now.
Yeah.
To figure out what really happened with Kel'Thuzad. But I remember going through it and going, you know, when Anam told me that, it sounded like we definitely weren't getting spooky Naxxramas, like extra spooky Naxxramas as a raid. And like, I could totally see us getting extra spooky Naxxramas as a raid.
I feel like we've played two different games. Because I distinctly remember killing him.
You know, I'm going to go and pull up the wiki page right now.
No, please. Let's just continue the next question. Let's just thank old Abbe for his question and move on and not make it so that I'm wrong, please.
I'm actually more curious than spiteful, believe it or not.
Sure. Damn it.
So
what does it say? I'm so excited.
The Medallion of Dominion was retrieved and Margrave Sindane saved, but Kel'Thuzad escaped back to the mob. So he did yoink himself out of the necropolis.
Wait, there was a Morgraine there?
No, Margrave.
Oh, Margrave. Okay. Wait, who was that?
The other lich that was like tied up.
Okay. We'll just, okay.
As a Venthyr, it was like, who's this? Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember.
Kel'Thuzad had like cooed the House of Rituals and had the, apparently without killing the existing Margrave, because that makes sense.
That's weird.
They just left them all tied up for us to untie. Like, who does that?
Is Margrave the woman you meet like halfway through any dinner Margrave with? Margrave is
the title for the head of the house.
Oh.
So Margrave Sindane is the lich that was in charge of the House of Rituals.
Who's the people you go eat dinner with? Do you remember in the Venthyr campaign? Like you go to their crib and eat a meal with them? You go through a blood mirror and like show up.
Oh, I don't remember. I know who you're talking about, though.
You say I'm bad at lore. I remember eating the dinner.
I know as much as you do. You don't remember the name either.
That's true. Actually, that's fair. Okay. Enough lore. I can't handle it. Maybe that's. So you know what I might do next week? Maybe for next week we'll talk about this, but maybe next week is like a lore episode where like I will watch what happens and be like, I think about this. We'll watch it together and then I'll be like, this is what I thought happened and this is what actually happened.
I'll have to figure out some tech issues with getting the audio for that on the audio podcast. But yeah, we should do something like that.
That'd be pretty good. All right, cool. All right, well, Abbe, thank you for the question. And Squee557, thank you for your question earlier. And we have one final question tonight. It comes from Kate. Kate always asks the best ones. So Kate asks, if you could be a steward, which one would you be and why? You want to go first here, Hamilton?
I only realized after the actual like campaign that the one you pick is the one that becomes your steward.
Mm-hmm.
So I lucked out and got the one with the flute. I got Ippa, but I don't know what any of the other ones are.
Okay, cool. I didn't realize you could change them. I only thought there was one. So... I would be the Ippa one because I also got the flute guy. Actually, I lied. I did know. So,
not that I didn't know that. I know now there were multiple. I found out after I got through that part of the quest, but it was like, oh, well, I just thought they were all the same.
Yeah. I mean, so if you could be a steward, which one would you be and why? It actually probably would not be Ippa, although Ippa and the flute is pretty cool. I would actually be, and I'm literally, you'll see my eyes moving because I'm reading about these people as we talk. I would be Bumos.
Okay.
Bumos is the big dude with the hammer.
Okay.
But
Bumos is that so you can say hammer time?
No. It's better. Bumos is a baker at heart. And he loves to bake and always has a slice of cake or two ready for you is the description of him. So I would be Bumos because I love baking and I love cake.
Does he give you a food buff with that?
I don't know. That's literally the description that they put in like the Meet the Covenants page on WoWhead or on the WoW website. I don't know what he does. All I know is that if he loves cake, sounds like the guy for me.
Yeah.
So
I'm pretty happy with IPA, you know.
I mean, IPA and the flute's cool, but like, I don't know. So here's the thing. It is cool when the flute is played for you. Less cool when you're the one playing the flute. That's all I'm going to say.
I guess that's fair.
And this question was, who would you be? So yes. I would like to be a dude who swings a hammer and bakes a lot of cake. That sounds like a great life. But just so you guys are aware, there's other ones that they said. So Pico also plays a clarinet, another winded instrument. And Farah is essentially a fighter. She just wants to fight everyone. She wields a huge hammer, apparently. So
like Buma's, but without the cake.
Well, Buma's got like a little hammer, I think. And like hers is like big. Or maybe I mixed up the pictures, but.
Maybe. So like Buma's is like a carpenter.
Yeah, yeah. Like he's like, yeah.
Also a baker. Yeah. And
jack of all trades.
Farah is a like sledgehammer enthusiast and also presumably flies and shoots rockets.
Probably. Wait, what? Why would she fly and shoot?
It's an Overwatch reference.
Oh, Farah. Yeah, no. It's not like fat. No, it's F, not a PH. It's yeah, the not, yeah. Yeah, F is the grounded version. F doesn't have wings or flies. Just the PH. That's the flyer. Because flying, well, shit.
Flying, well, I mean, they're owls. They have wings.
Yeah, but they're like.
Too much fly? They can't, like, right?
So, fuck. There's no way. They're like penguins. They're the penguins of Shadowlands.
They happen to also be able to talk.
Yeah, they're flightless owls. You've seen those. Those are real. Maybe. But yeah, I would probably be Bumos. Bumos? I believe I'm probably mispronouncing this name.
I can't read it, so you're definitely getting it right.
Awesome. You'd be IPA. Gosh. And of course, Abby be IPA. All he wants to do is play the flute, so. I think, Kate, that's your answer. Hopefully that was enjoyable. As you can tell, both Emerson and I really don't know much about the companions.
Well, I went in planning to be Night Fae, not Kyrian, so I didn't really pay that much attention to it.
Yeah, and it wasn't a max level thing, so I didn't pay any attention to it, right?
Yeah, like, it was after I saw the pilot, so.
Yeah, I just clicked through.
I hate that add-on is so dumb. I don't like it. Like, okay. Everybody, you know, play the game in your own way, have fun how you want to have fun, but. Like, if people are just going to use that, I don't know, wow, Blizzard should actually just sell level 60 boosts the day the expansion releases. Or, like, when the race to level 60 completes, like, turn on level 60 boosts.
Yeah. I mean...
Like, it's... If you're leveling with AAB, you're not playing a game. You're like, clicking repeatedly... Until you hit 60 and start playing the game you actually want to be playing.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, I get that, but it's also like really nice to just zone out and like,
yeah.
But like, so here's how I use AAP. I don't use it because I just want to skip everything because I'm fine with leveling. Like, I'm fine with that process. But what I want to do is I literally just want to watch bars go up with the least amount of mental effort in, like, input into it. So yeah, like, if I can literally just like, essentially this go on autopilot
questions.
Exactly. Like if I can just autopilot on, if I can have, like, you know, whatever anime I'm watching on my other screen, because of course you watch anime with, you know, subs and not dubs, right? So I gotta be reading while I'm playing. I just need the thing to just click, point me where to click. And that's what I want to do. So yeah, that's why I use it. But I would agree that, like, I mean, to be fair, if they sold level 60 boosts the day of, I would just wait and buy them because God. Okay, maybe you're right, Emelson. Maybe it's a terrible add-on. Fuck. I think I'm on your side here. I think you've turned me.
I was having a discussion with, to go on yet another tangent,
nice.
With people in Guild after raid last night about how bad weak auras is for raiding.
Oh, yeah.
We're like, weak auras is a phenomenal add-on, and I think there's from a, like, academic research perspective, there's so many cool little social things with it of how people interact using it and build tools and share the tools and, like, all of that's really cool. but also we have fights like Ajara that they're literally not doable without weak auras. You cannot do the intermission on Mythic without weak auras. There is no way. And that should never happen, but it happened. And the boss was still killed in the regular amount of time because weak auras exists.
Yeah.
And these kind of complexity bloated fights that literally are undoable without tool assistance. Like, it's just, it is allowing them to get away with really shoddy designs on some of these bosses. Some bosses are great. Some bosses, you can tell that the level of complexity that we're getting on these bosses is only because of the presence of weak auras. And like other add-ons, you know, to an extent, the top guilds right now have dedicated add-on developers.
Which so is great. Like on payroll. Like that's the crazy thing to me is like, it's not just like, oh, hey, like you'll take me to a mythic kill after we're done and I'll get paid. Like that's my payment, right? It's like they literally get paid for their work, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But also crazy. Like at the same time, also absolutely nuts. Like that's where we're at in terms of
I think mythic rating in particular would be in a much healthier place if way back in 2006, when WoW was young, they had put their foot down and said, no more add-ons.
Yeah.
They would have actually, for one thing, had to fix their UI.
I don't know if you ever tried to heal using the base UI frames, but it sucks.
And like they've made improvements. They have, I think they have threat plates basically baseline now.
I have no idea. I've not used the base UI in years, so.
I don't know. The game is not, you cannot mythic raid out of the box. You need other things. You need at a minimum weak auras.
Yeah, and I mean, I think to be fair, like I think you could still have a lot of the same mechanics. The timings would be different though.
Yeah. I mean, so the other thing too, like bigwigs, DVM. If these things didn't exist, nobody would raid. Nobody would be able to kill. Like
There'd be way around.
So annoying.
I mean, you'd have to you'd literally have somebody that have to know all the timers and call timers. Like that's what you'd end up having to do.
Except that, like, what about spell queuing and stuff like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's where you get into like the issue of like with spell queues and stuff like that.
At some level, like my point of comparison was Final Fantasy, which doesn't have some of these things, but then at the same time does have external add-ons that will read game memory to read the log as being written and basically do DBM bigwigs kind of things. And they have actually at this point they basically have weak auras but more powerful than weak auras because it's not restrained by the game in any way.
Holy shit, that's crazy.
But it can't interact with the game. It can only But the complexity of building that stuff is high enough that like the world first kind of people still use it. Yeah. But everybody else, like everything is telegraphed. You can play the game without needing all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a much better place for the game to be, in my opinion. But like stuff like Azeroth Autopilot, weak auras. I think WoW would have been better if they had just not allowed UI add-ons.
Yeah, it would have been, I will tell you, it would have been tough for me to keep playing because like I'm very much like the visual, like very much visual in terms of like I want to play something that has a good UI. Like I'm very much more like form over function? Like I very much would rather look at something that looks good but is like terrible in terms of the way it operates versus something that's like perfect in terms of gameplay but looks terrible, right? Like I probably skew towards the pretty things, you could say, right?
And I mean WoW's UI base is pretty. It's a very particular kind of pretty, and if it's not your aesthetic, I mean,
yeah,
unfortunate. But the base UI is perfectly functional for like leveling and doing molten core.
Yeah,
which is not saying much.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. So yeah, I guess, I mean, in a WoW without weak auras, like, yeah, like, Ajar is a really good example of something that never would have been done. I mean, even, like, Mythic Archimonde and the radar would have, like, never been done, right?
Yeah. I mean, the radar is something that was so good that they went out of their way to break it the very next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the fight, then I don't know if like Max sort of hinted this on some of, I don't know if it was the interview with like Scripe and him and Preach or some other point, but like the nameplate anchoring weak auras that they got rid of were about to, like, he basically talked about like they had some really great, when did they break that?
Nighthold.
In Nighthold?
It worked on Star Auger, and that was the last time.
Yeah, he's like, they were like going and they had some really crazy ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had like some crazy ideas of what they could or couldn't do with that stuff moving forward. But yeah, I mean, that was, I think, yeah, weak core is, yeah, like Azhar is actually probably the perfect example. That transition would have been, it's impossible without a weak core. In terms of the speed, right? Like, I think you could get there, like I mentioned, like if the timings were different, where like you had more time to get to points or at least call things out, right? But it would eventually, like, weak auras do, they're bad for the game in terms of like things are more complex, but they also speed it up, I think.
Yeah.
Because if you can build it and quickly show information, it makes it so that Blizzard can then time the things differently. Yeah.
There's a mechanic on the tank mechanic on Darkvein, which like she does a tank hit and then you do a little Jadefire Masters minigame.
Mm-hmm.
And those things don't get logged unless you get hit. So there's nothing, there's no nameplates that's used for some kind of like rare mob detection kind of stuff and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way for an add-on to tell that they're there until they've hit you. And honestly, that's my favorite tank mechanic that they've put on a boss. Like tank specific, like here's a little mini game for a tank to play kind of mechanic that they put on a boss since Legion.
Right.
And you literally can't use weak auras on it.
Right, but I think like to me weak auras are much more of a like I look at them in more like raid wide things versus like raid. Like individual. Because like that same thing could have been said for like the like you mentioned the Jade twin things and
BOD.
Yeah. Where like there wasn't a weak aura for the intermission there. Like you just had to play it. So I mean like I think there are still like the raid wide mechanics are generally, to me at least, the more interesting ones. So requiring or not requiring, but allowing weak auras to interact there, I mean, personally, I think is fine. But I would agree that like if they were going to do this, this was something they probably had to do years ago, which would be just strip everything. Because like pulling out weak auras now, and really it's not weak auras, right? Because like weak auras are
not just I have been saying weak auras, but it's not just weak auras. It's weak auras and DPM and bigwigs and all, like Plater does a bunch of this stuff too, and
Plater's crazy. I'm down a rabbit hole.
Add-ons for healers can do some really fun stuff too. Like it's just the existence of add-ons. Like if weak auras weren't a thing, it would be something else.
Yeah.
So it's not like weak auras in particular is bad. It's add-ons, like allowing Blizzard to put disgusting amounts of like raid complexity on fights and. Even if it's not possible for players to actually do just by playing the game, we can still do it by building tools to play part of the game for us.
Yeah. But then, and then for me, at least the flip side of that is I get to make something like very customized for what I want. You know what I mean? Which is like Plater was a good example where like now I have like certain mobs get like highlight, their nameplate changes color and highlights. And like, so that I know like this is something important to pay attention to.
Like that I do like, I have something set up where the nameplates for mobs that are being tanked by trees or earth, Ellie or ox statue change colors.
Gotcha.
So I can tell. So it's not just like normally threat plates go, you have threat, you're losing threat or you don't have threat.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't have threat, but the thing that does is earth Ellie, I'm okay with that. So, but then there's things like when trees die, if they all had red nameplates and they keep their red nameplates, I don't realize that the trees have died and they're all hitting the mage.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I mean, I guess I definitely see the point of what you're making. I don't know if I'd want to give up. I think I'm okay with complexity, like that requires something versus the other side of that, which is literally the base UI. And I would say a slower game. Like, there's no way they can make the game as fast as it is without.
Yeah. I mean, it just requires a different kind of mechanics.
It requires the
kind of thing that you can... the kind of mechanics where you really need weak auras are the stuff like going back to Ajara again, Ajara Intermission, where it's this huge raid coordination thing where everybody has to do exactly the right thing and you have very little time to get it right. And if you get it wrong, the raid wipes.
Right.
And at least one of those things would need to change in the design of that. Probably more than one thing in order to make it doable without weak auras. You would need more time, or it would need to be less punishing, or the amount of coordination would have to go down, or some combination of that in order to do it without weak auras. And so they would need to just design the fights, not necessarily more slowly, but differently. And I do think that, you know, if 15 years ago they had said no add-ons, the game's design would be a lot different now. But then again, you never know. Maybe the game wouldn't be here anymore.
Yeah, so I mean, And it's funny though, too, because I think back at, as we sort of talk about this, just thinking about some of the fights that I did on progression that I thought were really good, or some of the best, right? And I don't think you would have needed weak auras for those. It's just the ones today you do. Like, Siegecrafter, I think, is a perfect example of a fight that, like, you don't need weak auras to do, right? Like, you needed timers for sure. So you need to know what was coming up next. But, like, weak auras were not something that would have generally been helpful. In terms of, like, you know, beyond just like what should you kill next, like make a weak aura that tells you like what weapon to kill next on the belt, and like somebody can call that out, or somebody can have a sticky note on the desk and be like, all right, we're killing like rockets next, or whatever it was. So but yeah, like things like even like Thogar and the trains, you didn't need it. Sorry, I'm just like thinking back to all the great boss fights that I love that like they didn't need it. But then like Ajara, like there's no way you do that intermission with Ajara without it. I'm trying to think if there's anything in like the current tier that you would actually require. I feel like
Hungering Destroyer gets a lot easier with weak auras.
Yeah. It's particularly not even weak auras, but that add-on like infinite rate tools, I think makes it almost a joke if you just follow the soak patterns, right? I don't know if there's a weak aura that does it, so infinite rate tools is an add-on that has a bunch of boss mods in it, but it has one specific for Hungering where basically you split your raid into four groups. There's the four group strat. So you split your raid evenly between those four groups, and then what it'll do is it will lock those groups in, and then whoever gets Miasma, it'll assign two people to soak them each time. So like the first person goes in, and then the second person will get a timer that says you need to soak this marker at this time. And then it'll rotate through and does everything automatically. So as long as the only thing it doesn't do is, now that I'm trying to explain this to you, the only thing that it's bad at is like if somebody takes a hit with Miasma that they shouldn't and they're low, it won't tell somebody to jump in automatically. So you have to make sort of somewhat of a mental decision, but at least the one person soaking them is sort of a particular like cadence and like order.
Yeah.
And it'll dynamically change it. So like if two people in your star group get Miasma, it'll tell one of those star people to run to a different marker and then also tell maybe a person from the star group to go soak them if needed or whatever it ends up being.
Yeah.
So it's a cool management way to do that fight. It makes it easier. I think, and to be fair, I don't think you actually need it to happen, but it literally makes the fight a joke. Like it makes it probably much more akin to the difficulty it should have been at. Cause I think that fight is a fucking mess if like for where it is in the instance. I also hate it. So but yeah, I mean, I think there are certain, I think that might be the one this tier that makes sense in terms of like makes it easier with an add-on or weak aura.
Cause a lot of the other stuff like Zymox is really consistent. Inerva just has no mechanics. No raid organization stuff. It's all like, you know, go soak the puddles and then kill the adds and then do the beams and that's the fight.
Council,
there's not really a weak aura that does it.
It's like the recital is helpful. That's the only one that's helpful, but it's like get the debuff move, don't get the debuff. Like if get the debuff move one way.
I actually think if there weren't weak auras, that fight would be a lot harder.
Really? Because of that. For recital?
If there were no weak auras, that fight would be harder because of that.
I don't think
because
so.
Because you don't have time to look and see if you have the debuff. With their debuff UI sucks. It is
So
you literally would not have enough time. They would need to give it a better telegraph or more leeway after it starts for people to move.
Yeah.
Or people just die. Even if we didn't do the soak strat, this next strat, rather.
Yeah.
That's
fair. That's fair. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That weak ores add-ons, I love them, but I understand why some people are like, this kind of ruins parts of the game. So.
No, I love weak ores. I think it's great, but I also think the game would be better if 15 years ago they had said no. But ship has long since sailed, and we have done a very poor job at staying away from raid topics today.
Look, only for the last, how long have we been talking about this? Like 20 minutes? 20 minutes,
yeah.
Kate, thanks for the question about Stuarts and Bastion. It was great. Great way to start our topic on weak ores and add-ons. I loved it.
I think that's our last question for today too, right?
No, we don't have any others, so I think we are golden. So
all right, that is it for our show today. Those of you that made it this far, thank you for listening. Thank you for showing up and listening to the show live. As always, we'll be back next week, same time, same place. That is 8:30 p.m. on my Emelson's Twitch channel. Always linked in the Pika Serenity Discord and on the podcast page if you pull up one of the podcast episodes. But, you know, as always, thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the show and the site, you can do that over at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And we really appreciate your support, whether it is financial through Patreon or showing up and hanging out while we do the show or coming and hanging out in Discord and helping out, you know, however you want to contribute to the community. That's fantastic. But that is all for our show today. So nice. I will leave you with good night.
Goodbye.